Welcome to Director's Playbook, the podcast where we explore leadership, legacy, and the future of funeral service. I'm your host, Paul Lovelace, and today I'm joined by someone whose name is synonymous with tradition and transformation in our profession, Walker Posey, Managing Director of Posey Funeral Directors in North Augusta, South Carolina. Good to see you. Welcome to the show.
Good to be here, Paul. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
You bet. It's an honor to have you on. What's new in your world?
You know, something's always new, I guess, right? It's been a kind of a weird year in funeral service, I think, in terms of just death rate and numbers. We've definitely seen that. So we've just kind of, I guess, post-COVID, fallout maybe. But
yeah, we're still seeing some of that. Hey, before we get into some of that, would you tell us a little bit about yourself, give a proper introduction? I think most people in our audience probably have heard of you or are familiar with your location and your business, but feel free to introduce yourself for us.
I'm a fourth generation funeral director here in South Carolina, right on the border of Georgia and South Carolina. My great grandfather started our business, Posey Funeral Directors, in 1879. So my grandfather had seven brothers. They all worked, six of them worked in the business. And my father was my granddad's only child. And the other folks had no one in their line. So we didn't know how to transition it properly. The original business was sold to Cherry Pullins actually years ago, Sentinel. And then my dad had gone out on his own years before. And so I purchased a business from my dad maybe 10 years ago, but have been involved in our family business probably for the last 30 years.
Wow. That's saying, I'm just telling you that it's rare to have a fourth generation funeral home owner, a funeral director. And so congratulations and get going on the fifth generation before too long.
Well, you know, I got engaged. I'm getting married in June. Hey. So, I'm 38. She's 30. So there's hope there, I guess. But I'm not even too old for kids. We'll see what happens.
Never too old. Well, let's do this. Have you been on any reality TV shows lately? That's what we got to know about.
Great question. You know, as a matter of fact, I have.
You're probably the only funeral director ever been on a reality TV show.
You know, it's interesting. So I always have kind of a secondary business I'm working on just to keep my mind busy. And I was running partnerships and client development for a bank out of the UK that my buddy owned. So we had an office in New York, and I was living between New York and South Carolina, which is great because there's a direct flight and I could be home half the week and, you know, be back if I needed to the other half of the week. So I was in New York, and a reality TV producer approached me on a dating app. As a longtime single guy, I have plenty of experience in dating apps. And she goes, "Hey, this is a fake profile, but we like your profile. You know, please, we're doing a reality show for Fox, and it's a big deal, whatever. And we want you to do it." And I was like, "No way, not interested." So I kept saying no for like 3 months. Finally, she goes, "Hey, listen, just do a call. We really want you to show. Just do a call with my producer." So I did a call, and I'm like, "Listen, I have a really sensitive business. I'm in the funeral industry. Like, I'm not looking to be some crazy person on a reality TV show. I'm most concerned about that business, you know, having continuity and success. And like, all my fun stuff in life is secondary to that business," which is kind of how I always look at my life. So she goes, "No, it's not like that. Listen. So we talked to the showrunner and the executive at Fox, and they go, "Listen, our goal of this show is we have a girl who wants to have a family, and we're trying to find like guys who are a little more successful and older who could fit the demographic to be a father. And it's not like a contest to be a dad, like a baby daddy contest, but which is kind of what the show ended up being." So I go, "Okay, it's great." I bought into it, and I was a little bored, you know, because sometimes in a family business, you know, you get a little, there's a little, you know, when you, now it's my father's pretty stepped back. He's there when he wants to be, and I hope he comes around a lot, but he goes to the beach more than he comes to the funeral home. So at that time, he was still kind of on me. If you ever bought a business from your family, you know, it's an interesting thing. That's a whole other podcast. But I needed a little break from him. So I went on the show, and my producer was a really great guy. And he said, "Listen, you're not going to mess it up. The little ladies in your town are going to love this show. It's going to only help your brand." And so sure enough, I did it. And it was interesting. I mean, when you learn about how reality TV shows filmed, and actually the guys who filmed this particular show were really good. They did Jersey Shore. They did, you know, all of these. And my producer particularly, everyone kind of has their own producer. He found Pauly D and all these Snooki, you know, so he knew the game. And I said, "Listen," I said, "Damon," he's still a great friend of mine. I'm like, "I cannot, like, you know, I got, you know, my most important thing is the funeral home." So, but sure enough, we did it, and I didn't really love it. Kind of halfway through, I'm like, listen, I don't think this is for me, whatever. And so I exited. She actually didn't pick me, but it was great. It worked. The timing was good. She was a great girl. No, she was a great woman. I just was like, I can't keep doing this for like 6 more weeks. I'm going to go crazy. But sure enough.
Did you learn anything from your experience on the
ladies, the little old ladies that I knew, like the 80-plus demographic, they're having watch parties. They love this thing. And you know, hopefully I wasn't out of pocket on the show and represented our brand well. And
so would you ever do another reality TV show?
That's I wouldn't do a dating show. It would depend on kind of what it is. You know, I don't see any good line for funeral reality shows.
There's probably not. My wife and I always wanted to do The Amazing Race. That's the one
that'd
thing
be fun.
I would do.
Yeah.
Cause I wouldn't do Survivor.
Yeah.
That's too hard.
Yeah.
Naked and Afraid. I'm out on that.
I'd do like a golf show, amateur golf event.
That would be a good one.
Yeah. So
we got to think through that a little bit. Well, thanks for sharing that. I know that was not necessarily part of our pod today, but
it was a lot of fun. But it does teach you, you know, like it teaches you a lot about just in terms of interacting, production of any kind of show and how, you know, how the subjects and the crew interact. It was a lot of fun, really eye opening. So.
Good experience for sure. Yeah. For sure. All right. So fourth generation funeral director, what's it like growing up in the family business? And give us the deets on that. And
you know, so my family and my dad specifically, he's a great funeral director. And he was really an old school, a funeral director's funeral director kind of. So I grew up watching us come home from every family vacation. There was never a family vacation we went on where we didn't come back. We drove across the country a couple times. And sure enough, Miss Jones had passed away on Thursday. We were supposed to be home on the next Thursday. And we came home all the way that night. So I was able to really see what dedication and service really mean. And to really see that my dad really gets all the good things in his life from the feeling of having served well during that time. He loves that. So, I'm really fortunate to have had good teachers. You know, and I think that I've learned, you know, kind of the importance of heritage. There's a sense of pride that comes when you have a grandfather or a great grandfather that served in our business. I have one good story about that. My granddad would always say, if you want dollars, you'll get dollars. But if you love the people and serve them, the people will come and they'll bring some dollars. But more importantly, you'll have good relationships. And that's kind of what we've tried to do and my philosophy today still.
That's so good. I mean, that just describes and illustrates your heart for helping others in a hard time.
I had a situation. We were around Christmas, maybe, I don't know, 10 years ago. And I was working the door to visitation. A lady came in and she goes, "You don't know me, but is that your granddad on the wall?" And I said, "Yep, that's Dudley Posey." And she said, "You'll never probably know this story, but my dad died when I was like 5. And she said, "Your grandfather buried him. And until I was 18, your granddad came around with the house with presents. We never knew it was him, but he made sure my mom had Christmas for us his entire life." And he said, you know, she did that for so many families whose fathers had passed away and the mothers didn't have a source of income. And you know, you don't know those stories, but it shows that if you really care about your community, the community will take care of you in return.
Well, that's so good. Yeah. That's so good. It's great to build a legacy there.
Sure.
And thanks for sharing that story. I want to talk a little bit about what's new in funeral service. What are you seeing in the business? And what kind of trends are standing out to you when you meet with families? We'd love to touch on that a little bit. A
couple things. We could talk about family trends first and then maybe talk about kind of back of the house or, you know, technology. You know, I'm seeing a lot of people who maybe – I think as our culture is shifting, our religious culture is changing a lot. We're in the South, which has typically been a religious, you know, kind of church going culture. We're seeing a lot less of that, and just people who have not grown up with ceremony and ritual. So I think we're seeing a little bit of a confusion with the consumer as what to do. They know they don't want to maybe have a traditional formal church service necessarily, but they don't know what to do. So that's why I think you see a direct cremation rate increasing a bit because they go, well, we'll just do something on our own. And they really have no implication of the value of ceremony and ritual. You know, we talk about religion. That's a different topic. But I think that ceremony and ritual, whether it's religious ceremony or some type of humanistic coming together, the gathering together is so important, you know.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned that. You know, we did a study a few years ago. It's one of the largest studies ever done in the funeral profession. We polled 3,000 individuals from age 35 to 65, I think, in 2020. And there were some disconnects that emerged that we noticed. And one of them is just what you're hitting on. You know, we in the business think that families know more about funerals than they actually do. And what we learned is they don't know what to do. They never planned a funeral before, and they need guidance, right? Some of the other things we learned is they're willing to pay more for a cremation service than we actually think they will.
Yeah.
And that really stood out to me. I don't know. There's just so many disconnects.
I think we put a lot of limitations on ourselves, I think, as directors, you know, in terms of pricing, especially. I mean, and we you know, from our family follow-ups, we've, knock on wood, we've never had a family say that we were charged. They felt overcharged. The value piece is so important, and value is not what you pay. It's what you get for what you pay. And as long as you over deliver on that value piece, I think you're pretty good.
Yeah. Talk to me about that a little bit. I mean, I think it's, and this is my own opinion. I have no way to back this up, but I think funeral directors sometimes resort to pricing because it's easy and it's convenient, and they think that's what families want to know about, so they just lead with their price.
I'll tell you, you know, years ago when we kind of saw our, you know, cremation trend bumping up a little bit, we made a commitment to explain to every family every option every time with cremation, and not to convince them. Listen, we're not there to change a family custom. We're there to educate on the implications maybe of those choices. So we began to, I remember, like, you know, talking about, well, we can still have an opportunity to have your loved one prepared and embalmed and, you know, for a visitation. Well, I don't want to do that. They're being cremated. And as you're able to have that conversation, say, listen, maybe you don't, but let me explain the purpose of that. Many times, you know, the manner of death won't be the greatest situation. You want to have a chance to come in and say goodbye. Their friends want to see them, and their friends feel better when they're able to say goodbye in person. There's a lot of value in that. I've had many families who go, oh, that's interesting, no thanks. And they've come back in like 10 years on the next death and gone, hey, remember that thing we talked about where you can actually still have a funeral and a viewing? Let's do that. And
they remember what you
they
said.
They remember.
So I know you were right.
Your point's true. Like, it takes work to do that. It's a lot faster to just go, okay, that's what you want. Take the order. I'll go play golf this afternoon. But when you take time to explain and educate when you really believe it, because I do believe that there's a great value in saying goodbye, you know.
I think our words matter. And so there's value in the language that we use. And so sounds like you're really well-versed in that. So if you can articulate why funerals matter, then families get it. And the lowest price is not the best price.
I think that's the same with all the things we do. I mean, you know, the first call, for example, is so important. Like, your first interaction on the phone and when you go to the house or to the hospital to bring the person into your care, like, that interaction to me is the most important interaction we have. We've done it ourselves for many years. We actually have a great removal service we helped to get started who do a great job. But they went on every call with us for 3 months to say that here's how you dress, here's how you act. There's little things. You know, when you build a relationship.
I just picked up one right there. You said, when we bring the person into our care.
Right. Right.
That's totally different than when we pick up your mom.
Correct.
I mean, it's totally different.
You've got to believe it, though. So it you have to change the language. And there's funeral homes out there listening who, you know, don't say that now, but would like to. It's just a matter of saying it yourself. And then in your staff meetings, using the language and training on it. You know, we have a little playbook that we carry in our pocket that's called the POSI playbook. And it talks about the guiding principles we have and our pillars for success we do. Things like answer the phone after the second ring, never point to the restroom, always escort, you know, little things. Credit card back with two hands, like you're at the Mandarin Oriental, you know, like little things that people go, oh, wow, that interaction felt special. But I think back to the first call, you know, the language is so important. Every time we go in and after the family's had a chance, you know, we kind of explain the process. We're going to bring your mom into our care. And before we leave, we'll give you an opportunity to say goodbye if you'd like to, even though you'll see her again, whatever. So as we leave, I always like to say, you know, Miss Jones, if it's okay with your permission, I'm going to cover your mom's face just so that she has some privacy going out of the door. And that signals them that they're going to be covered and that, okay, I can either leave the room or I can stay. But they know what's going to happen. People are uncertain about our process and everything we do, whether it's arrangement conference or first call. If you can explain the process ahead of time in real time, I think that their comfort level gets much better.
100%. And you're demystifying, if that's a word, the process, because there's so much surrounding it. So I'm just curious if we have, you know, funeral directors that are listening and they're saying, no, I'd love to have what they have at POSI Funeral Directors. What advice can you give them on that? Because you can't just start that way.
No, I think it's a deep dive into who you are as a company, who you are as a person, and what kind of value you want to bring to the consumer. You know, if you're in the maybe discount space or limited service space, you know, that's a different conversation. And maybe you have multiple brands. Maybe you have a high service brand, you know, like a hotel. Maybe you have a Ritz-Carlton and you have a Fairfield Inn. Who knows? You've got to kind of create whatever that brand is and the value prop it has and stick with that value prop.
Well, they definitely speak to the customer differently at Ritz-Carlton versus right. Motel 6.
Which,
right?
By the way, there's not a better or worse, and it's okay to own multiple brands. People want different things. But yeah, you're right. But you have to be true. You know, if the Fairfield Inn gave Ritz-Carlton service, the Ritz-Carlton would be out of business. And, you know, so it's, but there's a market for all those things. I think that you have to come up with a set of brand standards and guidelines and really believe them and train on them. I think a weekly training meeting is so important, whether it's 5 minutes or an hour or whatever it is. I know it's hard to get people together aside from when we're working, but just reiterating those principles over and over and over. Now it's been so many years for us, but when we started, it wasn't that way. I mean, we had a great, but when my dad owned the funeral home, we had a great brand. He already did these things as who he was. But as we began to have maybe less family involved and more people coming in who were new or out of school, you have to realize they didn't grow up around this culture. And so I had to translate that culture down into words. And my biggest pet peeve is when you go, hey, tell me what's the difference in your funeral home and the guy down the street. And they go, oh, it's better service. Because if you ask the guy down the street, he's going to say the same thing. Oh, it's better service. So I tried to quantify what service really means. And that's kind of where, you know, those things came from.
Yeah, some of those are hard to do because service, in a lot of ways, it's exceeding the customer's expectations and doing things you're not required to do.
100%. That's what it always
is. Have you ever read the book Excellence Wins?
I haven't. I've heard that book. I've never read it, though.
It's Horst Schulze, and you mentioned Ritz-Carlton's what yeah. I thought about. But anyway, he that was one of the things that he was all about, ladies and gentlemen, serving ladies 100%. And gentlemen. That was his mantra.
I think the other thing is you have to empower your team to be able to make decisions in the moment. If you come in a situation where a family may be having an uneasy feeling or maybe their expectation hasn't been met in that moment for whatever reason, and they could have just had an unreasonable expectation. It may not be even your fault at all. You've got the team member has to be able to go to change that, to make it right. And, you know, my team knows that, look, we have to have a certain, you know, budget to operate. But if there's a problem and we need to do something, they have the ability to make a change in the moment and do what's best. As long as they can explain it to me and what the reasoning was, there's no problem. You know, and I think families can tell when that culture's in place because the everybody in the team feels empowered to go, Miss Jones, let me make this right. Hang on 1 second. Let's do this, you know, or whatever. So.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned expectations, and you know, all of life's disappointments are the result of unfulfilled and unmet expectations, right? So if we can set those with our staff and with our team and with our customers, good things are going to happen.
And, you know, that's true with everything, even your website. I mean, I think that, you know, technology needs to be an extension of you and tell your story. You know, I think we do have a lot of things coming that are interesting in our profession. I was on a podcast, How You AI, a couple weeks ago, talking about AI and funeral service technology. And, you know, the main thing is...
Oh, do tell. I'm curious now.
I mean, I think that, you know, the human interaction can never be replaced. I mean, should never be replaced. You know, right. AI is great. I think there's a lot of good things we can do. There's a lot of software applications, you know, like intelligence for management software, let's say. So we've got to be able to use AI to increase our efficiencies in the back of the house. Because you know as well as I do that the people going into the funeral service are less and less. We've got to do more with less people. And even when cremation's high, there's still the same number of data points that we're entering and dealing with. So anything that AI can do to kind of pre-populate that information and give you education, I think is important.
Yeah, I think we're seeing that on the back end of the business where you're being more efficient, right, through processes, et cetera, but also on the front end through marketing and better serving families. You know, for example, I think somewhere around 30% of all obituaries are done with an AI obituary writer.
Yeah.
And which is if you'd have told us that 5 years ago, no one would have believed you.
I think the important thing, though, is like to get that obituary to be meaningful, you still have to ask the right questions. You got to put the right data in, right? So know how to ask the right questions. So it's not like just, hey, he likes golf, he loves God, and he likes blue. And then you got to actually get some. So I think you can still have all that interaction with the family to learn about him, their loved one and his life and discover who they are and then help. You know, it's hugely efficient.
Yeah, it's just a tool that the funeral director can use to better serve the family and create more value, right?
100%. Just the ability to even more highly personalize, you know. ChatGPT is a great example. I mean, if you don't know something, you can hop in ChatGPT. I mean, even if you don't know, even for me, how can I convince people to cross the river, a state line in my business and market to them more effectively, efficiently? I mean, there's ideas that you'll get you never thought of, and then you can kind of call them down and implement them.
Yeah. Give me three ideas to better serve the Jones family.
Correct. I mean.
And proofread this email for me.
Well, and also like in terms of religious customs too, it's really helpful. If you're not familiar with maybe a liturgical church, like Episcopalian church, you can say, hey, tell me the religious funeral rite around the Episcopal burial rite or whatever it may be. I mean, and then they could, you know, you want to go into any situation knowing the culture and custom and making them feel like you not only respect it, but you're able to understand it and you can, you know, that's so important. I mean, you know, we're the Catholic funeral home in my town and we're not Catholic, but I know I can tell you every point of mass, what to do. If there's ever an usher short, I'm happy to pop in and fill in, you know, and those are all important things. So
I'm so intrigued by this AI stuff and where it is right now and where it's going, because we didn't even have ChatGPT this time 5 years ago, right?
Right, correct.
And so think about it 5 years from now or 10 years from now or what have you. So what do you think the future holds for all of that in the funeral profession?
I think that we've got to, you know, it used to be, it kind of still is, where we have a lot of educated, smart people in our business, but they get used to doing the same thing all the time. And it's very easy to go, okay, it takes me an hour and a half to wait on a family, I enter the data, here it is. A lot of times I've found that funeral directors' minds just don't think out of the box at all. They kind of get, they're really good at these tasks, but we've got to change that. And we've got to learn to be able to use AI to educate ourselves and learn how to help it make us more efficient. There's a way to do this, and I really believe this, that families probably would like to make a lot of the arrangement online, and I don't mean it in an impersonal or a low service way. I don't think they want to sit in our funeral home, no matter how nice it is, for 3 or 4 hours making arrangements. And so I think that if we can find the better way to make online arranging like we're used to seeing when we buy something. I mean, that, you know, a casket, service, it's okay to do, but with caskets and merchandise, when the viewing tools we have are not adequate. A lot of companies are to be able to show and demonstrate and provide an experience like you'd have in a showroom. That's really important to us, because I think that families will make better choices. I mean, we have a service and selection guide we created that is, it's a PDF, but kind of a interactive PDF. And when families, when they actually use that, which is not a lot of the time, they buy, better merchandise than when we're selling it on our own. So
I can believe that. And that's another disconnect that we were, you know, talked about earlier, is that families are more open to online experience than funeral homes give them credit for. You know, they think they need to come down to the funeral home and you know, just to get started or just to finalize or just to.
Can you imagine the time you'd save if families did make arrangements online and it wasn't a low service interaction? They left going, wow, that's really easy. I'm so thankful for Posey. They made this so easy. I didn't want to go to the funeral home for 2 hours.
Well, not just easy. There's value in convenience.
Correct. No, correct. That's absolutely. And also.
And that allows you as the funeral professionals to spend more time on the family and that whole experience instead of
and interacting with them and like being there for their friends and making that the memorial interactions in your funeral home meaningful. But I think that also it helps us to provide a consistent offering. I promise you that all directors are not offering every product every time in a way that meets the family's needs. So, you know, having better video and content of what we do, military honors, what does a graveside service look like? You know, what does our, you know, a funeral procession look like? Whatever it is, like for them to be able to go, let me see how military honors looks. Yeah, Dad was a veteran. Let's do that. You know, all those things, they will naturally go to where they want to go. And if we have the resources to explain and educate, it's so much more meaningful, you know.
It is. And I think what I was came to mind anyway was options. You know, families want options. Give them some options and let them choose what's best for their family.
I mean, think about this. Like, how many times have you, as a funeral director, sat down and gone, Ms. Jones, let me tell you, the military honors are so meaningful. You may want to have someone there, or we are happy to provide a photographer to memorialize that, because you may want to have some photos and video of what they do to honor your dad or your husband, you know, today. No one ever says that. And they get there and they're trying to take pictures on their own. And you know, and the funeral home's like, well, I'm not going to offer a photographer. That would be like $200. They don't want to pay $200 more. Of course they do. But, you know, if you had a consistent offering online, you could say a note, by the way, it's an option to have someone, you know, memorialize this for you for whatever the cost is. Just offering things that have meaning. That kind of stuff has more value maybe to a family today than is it a mahogany casket or a cherry casket or a poplar casket. I guarantee you that has more value.
You're so right. You're so right. So we talked about creating value. We talked about some technology. You know, I'm intrigued by the succession planning because you touched on it a little bit. Being fourth generation, you know, can you just speak to that experience and how that transpired? Because that sometimes can be a tricky thing.
It's really tricky. It was tricky for me. I'll tell you, I think that if you look at the businesses in our country that are the most successful for the longest, they have figured out succession planning early. I'll tell you, our family did not figure it out. And that's been the biggest issue I've had because, you know, I had to actually borrow the money to buy the business for my father, and you have debt for several years. If you can keep a business fairly debt free, you have the ability to make quick decisions in terms of expansion opportunities. You have a decision to be, you know, if the market shifts or changes, it's no issue. You can be profitable even in a down economy. When the generations are saddled with the old debt to pay the old generation out, it almost doesn't work anymore in our economy. It used to work when averages were where they were at, but now, you know, we have much more call volume than we had before, and our revenue is great, but it's probably what my dad, you know, would have done on many less calls, right? So
yeah, that's interesting. So I'm curious about how did you get started with it? When did you get started? Do you feel like you got started too early or not early enough?
I went to work early. I would wash cars for my dad, you know, when I was in like third and fourth grade, and he'd come back out and go, there's a spot there. Rewash the whole car. You know, he taught me early the thing. And I'd go on funerals. My dad had an unfortunate car accident when I was in 10th grade and almost died. I mean, he's very fortunate. It was a miracle that he was able to come through that. And for several years, he was, you know, in rough shape. It took him a year to walk, and, you know, he had to be in a wheelchair for a while. And so when that happened, I'll never forget, it's a story where, you know, the kids dreaded fear of your buddy's dad coming to pick you from school and going, hey, your dad's in a bad situation. So we go to the hospital and he said, look, I don't know what's going to happen here. I'm hoping for the best, but you got to take care of the funeral home. Because really at that time, it was my dad, some part-time guys, you know, we had one main guy who helped my dad and then part-time guys and my mom. So I was, you know, hopping out of school to go do funerals. I was making every removal at night and getting up and going back to school the next day. So I was really had my hands in it early, and was pretty proficient in a lot of it from an early age. I decided I wanted to go to law school after college. And so I chose Pepperdine and I drove out to Malibu and got started. And my grandfather had passed away before this, and I'd come back for the funeral and I'd seen kind of how much meaning and value he had to the community. And I ended up dropping out of law school. I went to orientation and I was like, yeah, I really want to do this, but I know my dad needs my help and I want to go back. So I kind of family obligation in a way or whatever it was, I went back and I'm thankful I did, but I do wish I had a law degree just to have the degree. I'd say if you're struggling between, do I go work for my family or get the degree and come back. The funeral home's not going to go anywhere. You can be fine. However, I came back and went to Cincinnati, went to college, a mortuary school and got right in. So I worked for maybe 10 or 12 years for my dad. And, you know, there really wasn't a succession plan. And so, a good buddy of mine had started this bank in the UK doing crypto conversion and needed some help. And he had seen an article, his attorney had seen an article that I was quoted in on the Wall Street Journal. And he goes, hey, you know about high service? I know you're in the funeral business, but it seems like a high service business. We're doing ultra high net worth banking. Can you give me a hand and be a consultant? So I did. And that turned into a real gig. And so I said, Daddy, either sell me the funeral home or I'm leaving. And I never told this story before, I don't think. But and so he said, well, you know, I'm not ready to sell. I said, okay. He said, when are you leaving? I said, well, I've been making twice what you're paying me, my side job. So I'm just going to go give that a shot. And when you're ready, give me a call. So after about a year, he called me and said, I think I'm ready. And I was able to keep the other situation going too.
Right. So you planted the seed.
I think that the proper way to do that would be to really just sit and have a conversation and say, you know, if you're a young guy coming in or a young woman coming into the business, Dad, I'm coming in. You know, can we start thinking about a real plan? Let's look at a 5-year plan, a 10-year plan. I understand it cannot be overnight. You don't know everything. You don't know near what you need to know coming out of mortuary school to own a funeral home necessarily. But
no, but anything can happen, as we know all too well.
You've got to plan for it.
We just had a gentleman yesterday. We got the news on. He's 66, just retired from the funeral business, and sold his funeral home, had a massive stroke, and passed away. And so he did not get a chance to enjoy that chapter of his life. But you know, we all have those kinds of stories. But it's just a good reminder that we need to plan ahead and start earlier rather than later, whatever that looks like for you.
And begin with the end in mind, you know, like I think Stephen R. Covey used to say. I mean, like, it's important to you know, think about, you know, as the next generation comes in, really give them the tools to succeed. I mean, let them come in, you know, obviously from embalming and cremation to arranging and directing, but also finance and paying bills and how do you plan for budgeting and, you know, what do you look like? What tool? How about our family follow-up tools? I think it's important that, you know, the more experience you can give that young funeral director early on, and let them kind of interact, the better you are. Dad was great. He gave me some great experience, and it wasn't a negative thing. I mean, he just really wasn't ready to retire at all. And I was kind of ambitious, and looking back, I probably had a little bit of impetuous, vibes, I guess. And he could see that. So he was probably smart.
Well, you're older and wiser now.
Yeah, that's right. That's
older right. and wiser. Well, there's so much to learn, I guess, as a business owner. And, were there some lessons that your dad might have taught you that you could share with our group?
Yeah, I mean, my dad, his biggest lesson is always love the people. You know, that's what he always says. He also always says it takes a year to do a year's business, which is really comforting when you're in a slow year. And then all of a sudden, it does seem like that, whether it's a monthly or weekly or yearly, you feel like you're about to lose it, and all of a sudden you get 100 calls. Boom. You know, it's somehow the calls come in that time period. They just aren't spaced out evenly, you know.
There's so much wisdom in that generation. And you think, just things that I've been told over the years, don't build your church for Easter Sunday.
That's right.
And, you know, there's things that were instilled in me. I'm not a licensed funeral director, but I've been in this business since 97. People have shared it.
He always says, you know, if it doesn't happen in the back of the house, it doesn't happen. And you know, the back of the house needs to be as clean as the front of the house. One thing my dad was known for is the cleanliness of our care center. You know, it's no different if you go back there really than the front of the house. And so I think that speaks to the level of respect you have for those you're serving. And you know, we have a little sign on before we go into the care center. It says something, and it says, you know, basically what you see here, you know, it stays here, you know. So it's important to know, to have that kind of feeling that, hey, we don't joke around. This is not a joke. And back here, there's no jokes. There's no, you know, it's all, you know,
this is serious.
Your business. Yeah. So.
Okay. We touched on technology. Let's just talk about leadership in general, because, you know, we want this to be a place to help funeral directors, funeral home owners, and become better leaders. And so, you know, we believe that leaders are readers and they have a lifelong learning ambition. So what are your thoughts on just general leadership in today's funeral world?
I mean, leaders lead from the front. You know, you have to get your hands dirty. And I think that it's really important in our business to have some kind of moral authority that comes from having done things. You know, you don't have to do everything. And I'm not saying everyone has to be an embalmer and funeral director in every job in the world, but you have to be a worker, and your team has to know that your heart's in it. And that above all, if it's Saturday night at 10 o'clock and the phone rings, you're willing to take the call, whether your own call or not. You know, it's very difficult to have any kind of loyalty when they feel like you're not going to be loyal to them. And, you know, the things I've tried to do, I think, you know, it's interesting. The generations are different now, and I think work ethic's a lot different, and, you know, not always for the better, I think, but it's important to understand what your team values. So I have certain employees that value, you know, money over time. So if it comes to, can I take call on a holiday or weekend and get paid more, they'd love to do it. And I have other employees who value time over money. Listen, I don't want a raise. I want an extra 3 days vacation with my kids. And so I think as you can get to know your team and learn what motivates them, you can put together individual plans that make them happy. And you know, I think that's understanding your team is a really important part of leadership.
I think that's a really good advice because it's not one size fits all. And I think we stereotype generations. You know, I think millennials sometimes get a bad rep, sort of Gen Z people, but we've got some great young people that are hard workers, but they get thrown into this group that they don't want to work weekends or they don't want to work overtime or whatever it is. That's just not true.
I mean, you know, and we have great workers. I mean, and I've been guilty of kind of painting everyone with that brush because, I mean, for me, how I was raised, and I guess just who I became, whatever business it is, you know, if my personal house is burning down with all my possessions and things I love, and I had a person die at the exact same moment, I'd say, burn the house, I'll go to the death call. Because I just feel like that's what we do. And it's been hard. It took me a while as a person who believes that, you know, what do you mean I want to be on call? What do you mean it's Sunday? Like, every day is Monday. Like, how do you even think twice? Like, what are you saying? You're not gonna, if I told my grandfather, oh, I want to go, you know, I can't go on that funeral, I want to go, he was, what in the world? He would have cussed me up one side down the other, you know? But today, you know, people are different and we have to work with what we have. And I do think there's a lot of value in some, I hate the term work-life balance. I shouldn't say this, but I think it's for losers. I think if you're concerned about work-life balance, you're not a winner. You got to win, you know, and I believe that. But I do believe, having said that, that it's important that you give people you have to understand if they don't own the business, they don't have that kind of sweat equity anyway. You want them to all feel that way. But when you're paying the mortgage, it's a little different than when you have a great guy who's there getting a paycheck, right?
Yeah, I think we talk about work-life integration versus balance because they do blend.
Integration's a great term.
You take your work home with you and you take your home to work with you. And I mean, we're just all.
I tell my team, though, I say, listen, I want you to leave work being a better husband and a better father and being happier. I want you to go home going, man, I had a good day at work. It was busy. I'm a little tired. However, we had the best thing happen. I don't want you to go home going, man, I hate my job and this is terrible. And vice versa. I hope your life is good at home. So when you come in, you give me 110%. That's a big problem. You know, that's a great term, integration. Because it is important. I've learned, you know, in personal relationships, there've been times when I was dating the worst person in the world. Let's say this, I remember 15 years ago, I had a bad situation and, it affected me as a person. And I'll never forget one of my team members, you know, after he was with me 15 years and this was, you know, let's say 10 years post the, you know, broke up. And it was just a girlfriend. It wasn't a marriage, anything. He's like, you know, I almost quit when you were going through that with the girl that did it, so-and-so. And I said, what do you mean? He goes, you were a different guy, man. You didn't realize it, but you were really on edge. And I'm like, wow, I said, I'm so sorry. I mean, you know, your work life and home life, they should complement each other. And so I think part of leadership is being committed to creating that kind of environment because you want people to not use it as a crutch, but you want them to actually both areas to fuel their personal growth. So
I love it. This has all been so good. We've gotten some good subject matter here. And so I don't think we stayed on script, but we still talked about some great stuff.
Yeah.
Let's talk about, I mean, just the meaning of the future and, you know, what do you hope the next generation of funeral service, the leaders there can take forward from your journey?
I hope they can take forward the importance of caring about your community. There's no really shortcuts, all the old school values that are important, but I also hope they can listen to the consumer and what they want. I mean, I think there's a way that we can, you know, we have a tendency in funeral service to kind of, assume a lot of things about our clients and their wants and needs. And we assume if they make certain choices, then they must have certain set of values. And that's not true. I think we have to, you know, I hope they look forward and go, you know, what does this family really find meaningful? I think you look at the evolution of the Christian church, let's say today. Our town, for example, had, you know, a big Baptist church, First Baptist on one corner, and the Methodist church on the other corner. And today, those churches are, you know, maybe not as full as they were, but the non-denominational church out on the other side of town is going. My point is the evolution of the church and the worship experience is a really good example for us as funeral directors, even from a spatial standpoint. I told Steve Davis at True North, I said, man, can I get the plans for this atrium of your of your church? Because it's really laid out great for a funeral home. You know, we don't need little viewing rooms anymore. We need areas for gathering and for, you know, coming together. And so I think looking ahead, like, we need to really understand how we can better be built from a physical space and from a, you know, experience space to meet the new consumer's needs. They just want different things.
Yeah, I love that you mentioned that story. It reminded me, you know, sometimes in the funeral profession, we're like the guy standing on the beach trying to sweep back the ocean, and it's futile. You're never going to change that force, but instead we should be riding the wave and with the vision of the mission.
Correct.
In our sight. And the mission's going to be serve more families and live out our, you know, our meaning.
I think we have a tendency to take things very personally in funeral service. And I think it's like, you know, if someone doesn't, you know, if we perceive that they don't value traditional funeral service like we do, and it means something, we get offended. And we can't do that. And we have to see that, like, look, it's okay if you want to have this kind of music in your service. I don't care if it's religious or humanistic or whatever. I just want you to have something to have as a reference point for dealing with your grief. And
well,
we
that's
know
what's worked for these non-denominational churches, because they've, you know, they know the mission is serving God, yeah, right, and loving others, but they're not getting mixed up with the music necessarily, or the pews, or, you know, how they do worship,
it's really special to see. And look, I wouldn't say, I'm sure that no one would argue, like, are those people that, you know, people who connect in that worship environment versus a traditional worship environment, are they better served? I mean, whatever you like is great. Whatever brings you to God is great in that environment. So I think for us, whatever serves our you know, families and helps them have an experience where they feel like they're healing and they can experience the culture, their neighborhood coming together to say, this family, you know, we love you, we're here for you. That's important. So we're just creating different kind of events, you know?
Yeah. And we have to change with the times. That's the reality of it.
And there's no shame in that. There's no, you know, even though my granddad would have hated to see, you know, so many funerals where there wasn't a physical body present, he'd say, make sure you figure out how to help these people feel the best they can and to, you know, and do what you can to serve them. So,
great advice to end on. So, Walker, just want to sincerely thank you for your leadership and for what you're doing out there in South Carolina and Georgia. We're excited to what you're doing. Keep up the great work.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having the conversation. Anytime we get an opportunity to talk about funeral service and to promote the value of what we're doing, I think it's really important. So thank you.
So whether it's through innovation or tradition, it all comes back to leading with your heart and helping families find meaning and connection. You heard it here from Walker Posey. Thank you for listening to the Director's Playbook, and we'll see you next time.